Travels Through a Kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
Welcome to Travels Through a Kingdom. You're with myself, Kaya Flynn, up until 7 this evening, and I do hope you can keep me company on tonight's programme. I hope you had a good week. Do get in touch. You can do so by emailing me, kflynn@radiokerry.ie, or you can do so by texting or WhatsApping our number, which is 083 300 3300. We have loads on tonight's programme, so we may as well just get straight into it. Last week I attended the Mickey J. Cavan expedition, and we'll be hearing from Lily O'Sullivan and Phil Healy about their friend and how the day went as well. We will listen back to the archive of Sean Hurley when he spoke to Anita Fennelly about moving to the Basket Islands. We are going to head to the Kerry County Library to hear all about the Rose Memorabilia expedition and the Museum for the Gowns of Glory and much more. But first on tonight's show, he almost needs no introduction, but we may as well say we pulled Dahi O'Shea aside for a quick chat about the excitement regarding this year's Rose of Tralee. As you can tell, all around the town of Tralee at the moment, there's loads going on, and it's great to see. And I haven't actually been to a Rose of Tralee before like this, so it's great. And I was walking around doing the stalls and whatnot, and it is very lovely. But there's plenty of excitement, and there's plenty of excitement with Dahi O'Shea. And you can check out our interview as well, because we have it on our Facebook and YouTube pages. So we've videoed it as well. We're getting very technical here in Radio Kerry. So if you just search up our Facebook page, Radio Kerry, you can watch the video of our interview as well. So let's go to our chat with Dahi. We're here with Dahi O'Shea for the Rose of Tralee. Dahi, what is the atmosphere like?
Do you know, it's really, really nice. I've just pulled into town, just driven through Tralee for the first time in a while. It's my first time home since Kerry won the All-Ireland, so it was great to see all the flags up and a big picture of Joe O'Connor and Shawnee Shea lifting the cup as I'm coming in. It's the first time we've ever had an All-Ireland winning team here in Kerry before the Rose of Tralee, because it always happens after. So great, so that's all feeding into this as well, like I suppose with what we've been through the last couple of years as well, this is the last part of the jigsaw coming back together again. From, you know, say I was at the Flagshole a few weeks ago, and that was another big part of the jigsaw, and this is the biggest one, of course, at the Rose of Tralee Festival.
Obviously now there is a big absence there for a few years, so what's it like to be back? What's the atmosphere like in with the roses and whatnot?
Really good, really, really positive, really strong. I remember being here in Tralee in June 2020 when we were doing pieces to camera for a documentary type show we had, looking back at my first 10 years as the host. And it was the first time really I got downtown to meet people, because when I'm here now, to be honest, I'm here in the Meadowlands, and I'll go between here now and the MTU for the next 4 or 5 days, and that's really it. And I'll get downtown a small bit, but won't kind of get a whole lot of time down there. But that time in 2020 I got to meet people, and I really got the sense of what the whole festival meant to people here in Tralee and the people of Kerry, of course, and what they missed. And of course that was compounded then again last year, so I think you have 3 years of excitement, blagarding, madness and fun packed into the next couple of days.
Well, I can tell you one thing, I went down to the bazaar last night and there's a bit of madness down there. Will you be going down?
I won't be going to the bazaar, no. There's enough bizarreness going on with these TV shows. But I suppose it's just a busy time for ourselves here, because I'm just trying to keep all my energy for Monday and Tuesday. Because if I went down now to the bazaar, if I went down to maybe the Town and Country and a few pubs on the Blasket, a few of those places there now, or Sean Oaks and a few other places, I'm sure now I wouldn't be that healthy the following morning. So I try to mind myself. But to be fair now, it's hard. It's very, very hard, but I manage to do it every year.
Of course. And speaking of, you've been doing this for over 10 years now.
Yeah.
So what is it that you love most about doing the Rose of Tralee?
I suppose the big fact that it's home here in Kerry, that's the big thing. I try to think it's like an All-Ireland final in your own backyard, if you like. It's one of the biggest shows of the whole year. But also, I suppose the whole process for me, you meet 33 roses, and then over the course of 10 days, you see them change and evolve, and then you see them on stage. And you're kind of like the older brother, or the uncle going, "She's a very proud of that person, oh, fair play." If there's something that they might be worried about, and if you're on stage, and only myself and the Rose will know about it, and like I said, be telling a tough story, you know, and it can be hard to go up there in front of 2,000 people inside in the dome and whatever, hundreds of thousands of people at home watching, to tell your own story. And some of the stories can be very, very hard, and they get through it. Mm-hmm. And then you say, geez, that's really fair play, well done on that. Like, so there's a bit of that there. So then at the end, once it all goes well, I'm like the referee on a Monday when there's no one talking about him. He's done a good job.
Very good. Now, is there any surprises up in store this year?
Yeah, there are always surprises in store, and they usually come in the form of party pieces and getting me involved in them. There's two kind of big ones, two big setup ones. One involves a live animal, that there'll be no live animal hurt in the making of this TV show. Not too sure if there'll be a hurt presenter, but anyway, hopefully not. That could go wrong. It shouldn't go wrong. And then there's another one that I really can't talk about, that I think there'll be kind of a... one of those ones, like, yeah. But we always have them. And then, to be honest, like, as well, we have a few days to go, and we always kind of come up with one or two more party pieces between now and then as well. And there's just things fall into our lap, like the proposal and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
That year, like, no one knew about the... No, there was no talk of any proposal up until maybe Sunday evening. And then we were on Monday. So a lot of things happen over the weekend.
I know, definitely. Finally, Dahi, your reaction to Kerry winning the Sam Maguire the match. How did you feel going on?
Yeah, it was grand. I went to Waterford working actually for the week, so it wasn't too bad. And I live in hurling country in Galway, so I get away with that. That said, Paul Conroy, the full forward, lives probably about a mile over the road from me, and I meet him regularly. And you wouldn't mind. I said it to him before. I met himself and Damien Comer about a week before. Actually, it was the Monday after they won the semi final, and I was chatting away to them, and I said, "Jeez," I said, "we've a great full backline for you fellas," and I said, "we'll take them." And we were having a good bit of banter, like, they're great guys, like, and but geez, the Kerry backs did a job on them. I got caught in cameras, people will know. I was there on the day doing the Jubilee team from 97, and I was also doing the pit side interview, so I was supposed to be kind of neutral. But when the final whistle went up, I jumped up in the air. But there was a woman next to me, Lynette Fay from Tyrone, who worked for the BBC, and I turned around to her. I said, "Lynette, was that a good game or not, or was it a bad game? I don't know." Like, I was kind of paralysed for the second half. But what a game! Like, what a feeling to be All Ireland champions again.
What a week to be in Kerry.
Yeah, we have to get our hands in the Sam Maguire for the TV shows as well. I think it's
bring him up on the
we will like yeah we'll Tuesday have night. we'll have to get the Sam Maguire there.
Very good, Dahi. Thank you so much.
Not at all. Thanks for having it.
And that was Dahi O'Shea, who is definitely a Skitamini Urum regarding the Rose of Tralee. And the Rose of Tralee airs on Monday and Tuesday on RTE1 from 8 to 9, and then a break from 9 to 9:30 for the news, and then on to 25 to 12 as well. So that's Monday and Tuesday. So are you going? Let us know. There's plenty of excitement regarding it anyway, but let me know if you got in, if you could see any of the roses, if you went to any of the events. There's been loads going on, so it's great to see, especially before back to school as well, you know. I went to the bazaar there with Pat Kelly, John Drummy and Amy Narida on Thursday evening, and we had such a blast. It was so funny, but poor old Pat was shaking well afterwards. So he was awful shook after it, but you know, it's great to get down there and have the fun as well while we have it. In regarding that, now with all the excitement building for the Rose of Tralee, we had a look on what is on for the next few days as well. So first we're going to head to the Kerry County Museum, where I spoke to Helen about the Gowns of Glory.
The first one here is the first one. It's the dress worn. It's a replica of the dress worn by the first Rose of Tralee, Alice O'Sullivan. She was the Dublin Rose, but she was originally from Tralee. Her dress, this replica was made for the 50th anniversary. So it's important. It was important. The dress was long gone at that stage. But the replica anyway is just lovely to have, and and there's a lovely few bits and bobs to go with that. Mm-hmm. And Alice, when they got the replica made, then Alice donated a number of items in the case here as well. Mm-hmm. This is what her original dress would have looked more like. You know, the bodice is just slightly different, and that dress was that doll was on the after Alice won in 59. Cable's toy shop in town. It got a doll, and they got a little dress made with the sash and the tiara and the whole works, and put the doll on display in the window. Mm-hmm. So she was given that afterwards, and she's donated that to the museum. Mm-hmm. That's the lovely little jewel bag that she was wearing, that she had with her on the night, and the sash there as well. Mm-hmm. You see, Dublin. And then she was given as a you know, part of her prize was this lovely pendant watch as well. So it's just really nice to have that.
And you have the photo there as well, which is lovely.
Yeah, that's the photo of her, you know. And I think it probably was here in the Ash Memorial Hall that she won that as well.
Because,
you know, the hall was here. And this the Ash would have been in the early days of the Rose of Tralee.
And there's a few more dresses here with more stories. Will we have a look at a few?
Yeah, we can go onwards here and maybe moving. That was the 59. So moving on here. So this is one of the dresses from the 1960s. And this is a dress that Anne Foley from Birmingham. And she, actually interesting, and it's a cape and everything, but she made her own dress. And we find that with some of the earlier dresses, like there's another one downstairs, the Rose from Kathleen Welch from Holyoke, made her own dress as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, later on, you get the big glam, you know, outfits, but this was something that she made herself, and very unusual as well, and quite an unusual colour too.
Yeah. You know,
the colour palette tends to be blues, kind of greens, lots of whites, lots of reds as well, mm-hmm. you know, the occasional black, but this is quite unusual, and with the cape as well, and I think it's just nice that it is so different to...
It is. To even the design here, where you have like the little patterns and whatnot, I suppose, obviously, she did this herself, so that probably took her a few months.
Yeah, absolutely. And she said as well that she was really glad of the cape because the weather was mm-hmm. wet and stormy, so yeah.
Always unpredictable here.
Yeah. It's a smart girl, you know, to think of that. Now this one,
is an iconic one.
This is very much an iconic one, and this is the dress that was worn by Denise Murphy from Cork in 1991. So, you know, you've got the big puffy sleeve, so it is very much of its time as well. And it was designed by a designer called Ernest Perryman from Cork. He designed one or two others as well of the Cork dresses. And the big thing about it was Denise, her piece on the stage was an Irish dance, right? Mm-hmm. So Ernest Perryman, he thought that, you know, a lady lifting her skirts to dance was very unladylike. So what he did was he had you could detach this. And so there's a skirt underneath. So it was very, very Bucks Fizz. If any of your audience is old enough to remember Bucks Fizz in the Eurovision, the girls, you know, their skirts are whipped off. But so it was very much like that. So a lot of people remember that.
And there's really quite the design then on the other side.
I think it was all to do with the Cork coat of arms and that here, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, this would have been at a time when Cork and Kerry football was a huge rivalry between them and stuff like that, so the Corkonians always had to get one over here in Kerry. So, but yeah, you'd be amazed how many people remember that. Everyone remembers that, and Denise herself would say that people would come up to her, "Oh, you won, you're the Cork Rose, and you wore that dress," you know.
Yes.
So.
So this is the latest Rose of Tralee winner. Tell us about this dress.
Well, this dress was worn by Sinead Flanagan, who represented Limerick in 2019. And so, because of COVID, obviously, she's still the reigning Rose. because the festival, the competition hasn't been run since then. So I suppose if we started with Alice, you know, it's best to finish with Sinead. And this is the thing as well, is that every year, you know, like next year, whoever wins this year, hopefully we'll have her dress next year as well. So it's always nice to have, so people can actually go, yeah, because it's very fresh in people's heads.
Yes.
I remember that dress. And this is a stunning, you know, the colour is absolutely stunning. And what Sinead told us is it was designed by a lady, Sharon Gregory, she said, Limerick lady based in Mallow. And I think she did a great job. And what Sinead says as well is that it was very comfortable to wear on the stage. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that would be like so important as
well.
Of course. You know, and And she said it looks quite a heavy dress, but she said it just flowed, you know, beautifully on the night and stuff like that. So yeah, I think it's a lovely one to finish with. So I think this is the thing we'll all be wondering: what this year's winning rose is going to wear, and what it will
and
look
what
like.
Color,
what color, what shape, what you know, what kind of style,
sleeves, no sleeves,
sleeves, no sleeves, you know, all of that, backless, strapless, whatever, you know. It will be it'll be very interesting to see, and whoever wins, I hope her dress will find a home here next year as well.
Definitely. And this exhibition of the Gowns of Glory will be on for a few weeks as well for people to come and see when they want.
Yeah. We run it into September. I can't remember quite the date we're finishing, sorry, in September, but it'll be here throughout the course of the festival anyway. So and we're open for 7 days during August. So everyone is quite more than welcome to come in and have a look at the dresses.
Fantastic. Helen, thank you so much for your time and giving us the story behind every single dress. There's a story behind all of them.
There is. Okay, Kaya, thanks for that.
And that was Helen speaking to me regarding the Gowns of Glory here in the Kerry County Library. And you must go see it. It is absolutely beautiful and definitely spark off some memories there, and definitely seeing the involvement, I guess, of all the roses and how they put their dresses up, but even just seeing the way they evolved over the years as well, the different styles and whatnot. And we also have that on our Facebook page as well to see as well. But you should definitely call down there for the Gowns of Glory. And again, thank you to Helen for taking the time to go through that with us. Now, we must go to a quick break, but after the break, we'll be speaking to Tommy and Aoife from Kerry County Library. So don't forget to send your comments in as well. You can do so by emailing kflynn@radiokerry.ie or texting and WhatsApping 083 300 3300. We'll have more after.
Travels through a kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
Welcome back to tonight's Travels Through a Kingdom. Now, Kerry County Library have the Rose Memorabilia Expedition, where you can see the archives over the years of the Rose of Tralee. So I spoke to Tommy and Aoife about this and to tell us what is on display. We're here at the Kerry County Library with Tommy about the Rose Expedition here. Tommy, tell us a bit about it.
Well, Kerry Library has hosted historical exhibition of the Festival of Kerry really since about 1984, which was roughly around the same time as the library opened here. And it is compiled really from the resources and the sources that the library holds, for example the newspapers, photographs, different memorabilia, for example festival programmes, items that have been donated, like the tiaras, etc., have been donated over the years. And of course we have a very extensive Kerry local history and archive section, which people can actually come in and see the newspapers here free of charge, and you'll get the story of the festival year by year, which were really well covered in all of the newspapers of the time, in particular the Kerryman, and in since about 1972 Kerry's Eye, you know. So it's a wonderful record of the festival really. And there has been a book published on the festival a number of years ago by Ryle Dwyer. He did the Rose of Tralee historical book, historical record. So that's the only published record of the festival, you know. So other than that, you're really relying on what we collect in any given year.
Mm-hmm. You've collected many programmes over the years and you can see how it's evolved. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, it can be quite a challenge really, just to make sure you get them year by year. But here we have some of the earlier ones, but maybe of particular interest are the programmes related to the festival, the racing that was held in conjunction with the festival, now no longer with us. But I think it shows you the importance of collecting items as they happen, and it's probably part of our brief as a library that we collect things day by day, year by year. Examples, the weekly newspapers, the weekly advertisers, we collect everything about Kerry, are published everything about Kerry are written by somebody from Kerry. So it's important that we, as a library, continue to do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, it has changed a lot over the years. What's the biggest change you think that's happened over the Rose of Tralee since collecting all these items?
Well, the exhibition documents the changes, you know, from initially the Rose selection was held in the Ash Memorial Hall. It moved on then to the Dome. And from this year on, the Dome is no longer with us. We're gone up to the MTU. So I think that's a significant change. Also, maybe the presenters of the Rose Festival over the years, from Terry Wogan to Gay Burton to Derek Davis to Dahi O'Shea, there's quite a number of them, you know, and you can find all the names of the people that hosted or compared the host the rose competition over the years.
Aoife, you're a rose tree super fan. And you've been collecting loads of things over the years. So what's here at the Kerry Library about the rose tree that you've collected?
That I've collected. So back in 2003 to 2007, like I'm born and bred Tralee. So I loved it as a little girl. Like all these people in lovely, pretty dresses and everything up on the TV and the parade and everything. So I used to collect their autographs, which was a big thing. Back in my day, I'm not sure if it's still done, but I used to collect all their autographs every year and cut out the pictures from the Kerry's Eye or the Kerry Man and get them to sign beside their picture and decorate them all and everything. And trying to get a full house is very difficult because obviously the roses are in so many different areas throughout the festival. But yeah, I was here, I think, every year for the rose when they were here on the Saturdays. And yeah, coming after football, and I used to be in my football gear and everyone else would be in lovely pretty dresses. But yeah, it's funny how things have come full circle now to working in the library here, and
now you get to deal with them
now. Yeah, and a completely different perspective. But yeah, it'll be fun on Saturday. Yeah. And the girls made me signs and everything and made me display it here.
Oh, very good. So there is a lot on display here, Aoife.
There's
talk us through
amount.
What people can see if they come and visit.
Yeah, so there's a huge amount of history. Like there's the books that were published, like as Tommy mentioned, the programmes, and even just to look back through all the headlines from each year of the festival, like in the various different newspapers, it's amazing. And obviously to see the tiaras in person, like you see them in pictures and on the TV, but to see them in person here, it's amazing. And all the different Newbridge, when they were the sponsors, the different Newbridge memorabilia and different bits and pieces that have been donated, like for example, there's like original sheet music of the Rose of Tralee.
Wow.
And like glasses that would have been in the restaurants and pubs during the festival going back over the years. But yeah, it's a huge amount of history collected in one room, so it is. And all the pictures and everything, it's lovely to come in and look through all the pictures and see all the different faces. And all of the roses are so still involved in. I know people have come back every year to it, like they make it their holiday to come back, so it's amazing. It's so lovely to see it again after COVID has put a dampener on things for the last few years.
And I suppose as a rose tree super fan, have you ever been for the rose?
No. If you Katie, one of the other library assistants here, has appointed herself as campaign manager for apparently I'm going to go for it next year, but I don't know now about that. She's intent on getting it, but we'll see what happens.
Definitely. Tommy, this expedition is going on for a while, so tell us a bit about it and how people can come in and see it.
Well, I suppose firstly, what's on display here is only a part of what we have. Really, we've lots of files relating to the festival from the very start. But this year's exhibition is open until the last day of August. Right? People keep that in their heads. It's open during library opening hours. We're open 6 days a week, from 10 until 5 and until 8 p.m. on Tuesdays. So it's free of charge. It's available here as part of the service that we provide in the library. So I would encourage people to spread the word. Come in either before, during or after the festival. And really, I think it's worth looking at. And I'm sure people will enjoy it.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Tommy, for your time.
You're welcome.
And a big thank you to Tommy and Aoife for having us over as well. And do make sure you check out that that expedition, because it is quite fascinating as well. It's lovely to see Aoife's autograph book as well. And the last day we went to the Meadowlands Hotel when we were speaking to Doughty, and I noticed that a few of the Rosebuds as well had their autograph books out as well. So it's such a nice little memory to have. I didn't think people still did, you know, autograph books. It kind of didn't occur to me, but it's lovely to see. And hopefully now, next time we'll be talking to Aoife, she'll be one of the roses as well. But I'm sure it will spark some memories off for you to see the Rose of Tralee and whatnot over the years, and how it's been changing as well. So do make sure you go down to the Kerry County Library to see that expedition. Now, last week, the Artford Historical Society honoured a beloved visual artist who was a self-taught, but also his work itself has plenty to say to us today about how we gather and retain information, sustainable reuse of materials, connection with community and independence of mind. Mickey J. Cavan was one of a kind, and his community are still so proud of him to this day. Mickey passed away 26 years ago, but his legacy still goes on in the community. I spoke to Lydia O'Sullivan, who was a friend of Mickey's and loved his artwork and is involved with the Artford Historical Society, to tell us all about him.
My name is Lydia O'Sullivan. I'm a member of the Artford Historical Society, and I'm the curator of this project, the Mickey Cavan Exhibition. And I have that role because I have a background in art. I'm an art teacher in a local school, Presentation Secondary Tralee.
Okay, Lily, tell us a bit about this expedition. It's wonderful, and the story behind it is absolutely breathtaking. So tell us all about it.
Well, Mickey Cavan was a lovely, unassuming man, and he was born in 1916 and he passed away in 1996. He was 80 years old, and in that time he never married. He lived with his brother in a little cottage, and he had to leave school early at the beginning of the 30s and went labouring, farm labourer, so he didn't have much in the line of opportunities educationally, but he read everything he could get his hands on, like newspapers, books, and then he would write these things down, and he read on lots of different subjects like science and engineering, and he would write passages out of books in order to learn them. He had a dictionary and he increased his vocabulary, so he did all this work on his own, himself. And along with that, he had a fierce fascination with art, and that's what made him stand out really in the community. He would, as a boy, he'd draw on the gable of the cottage with coal or with turf, and there are stories about how his parents might tell him to wash it off before the neighbours would see it, because he was unusual in that way, his fascination with art. And when I got to know him, he was already in his 60s. He had made quite a bit of art already, and I was interested in art, so we used to have conversations about that, and he made really unusual art very quickly.
Like a lot of people when they were younger, left school after primary school, and then he went on to do that, so that was obviously a big thing for him.
He had a real drive to create art. No matter what, he made art. It was part of his way of being, and he always did. By the time I got to know him, he was already well accomplished in his practice, so he just showed me what he was doing. He would have talked about how it wouldn't have been encouraged in society for the likes of him to have such notions, maybe, to be making art. However, he made great friends and was highly respected and absolutely beloved by his real neighbours and his real family. And he is still very highly thought of. He made great friendships with young and old. And so it wasn't that he was looked down on at all by the community. On the contrary, like, we were proud of him, and he it's a testament to that so many people are here today, 26 years after he died, and people are here giddy with excitement and full of you know, pride for this man that they knew and that we all still remember because of the impact that he had on us. So he was actually aware of how much he was appreciated.
We're talking loads about Mickey, but let's talk about his art. What kind of art did he have? What was it?
So Mickey made paintings, sketches, drawings, and handmade books. He made these drawings and sketches on repurposed cardboard, like the back of an Omo box. And he would glue layers of cardboard together and build up a surface to paint on. And he would often choose the cardboard because it might have a buff colour, and then he'd use that natural buff colour in some of the work. He was interested in cartooning. He collected thousands of examples of a particular cartoonist named Dick Millington. And you can kind of see the influence of a sort of a graphic approach to drawing, and he also drew from photographs in newspapers, so there's a lot of black and white in his work. There's definitely a naivety in the work. He was self-taught, but he practiced it, and he made great choices, and he would approach subjects again and again. So there's this drawing that I'm looking at here of James Joyce, but there's another one, and perhaps there were others again that we haven't found yet. We found about 30 original pieces, and we know for a fact there are many more, and hopefully the exhibition today we'll all get to see each other's pieces, and all of them are, every one of them that was discovered sparked huge excitement. Huge excitement. The most recent one is a painting of Artvert Village in full colour on a piece of brown cardboard, and it's all bindy, and there's a bit of a sticker on the lower left hand corner. It's a ticket from Duffy Circus, and it's still on there. It's gorgeous, and the excitement among all of us when that was discovered. And that's the thing about his work, it does have that emotional impact. Mm-hmm. It's not just nice objects that are well made. These things get people excited, and that's the measure of a good work of art.
Finally, Lily, Mickey was here today. What do you think he'd say?
He'd say, I'm not too bad, because that's if you said, hello, Mickey, how are you? He'd say, I'm not too bad. So, but he would be smiling, because he framed his work. I mean, he made these little frames around his work. He signed every piece. He was working professionally. He was working, you know, as an artist. He saw himself as an artist, and he owned that. You know, he was proud of his work, and he presented it well. So he would be quite, I hope that we've done him justice. I hope that he'd be happy with the job we've done.
And I also spoke to Phil Healy, who was also a very close friend of Mickey's, and I wanted to talk to him about how he felt to be there today and share his memories with us here as well.
I'm Phil Healy from Brendanwell. I was a neighbour of Mickey Cavan's. So it's great to be here today to see. I'm very, very impressed by the fact that some of the young people here in Arthur came together to think about Mickey Cavan, who was, you know, a very, you know, he's a very humble man who never expected something like this, mm-hmm. which is a great sign of our youth today that they have thought for a man like that. Mm-hmm. That was the first thing I thought when I thought about this, that our youth are still very good.
Now, you were very good friends with Mickey Cavan.
Oh, I was, yeah, I was. I suppose most of my life I had walked with Mickey. Mickey would walk with a number of different families around, but I get many long days walking with Mickey down on East and the Beast, and Clown and the Beast, and digging drains, and, you know, the walk was hard, but, you know, Mickey was so interesting with different things that he spoke about. He was a Republican, like, he was a nationalist, like, but he was a man more for fair play, you know, like, than anything else. He'd be a man that would love Roger Casement, you know, and the fight against them, you know, the wrongs of the people around the world. But it was kind of hard to believe that how deep he went into subjects, because he never showed it.
Phil, he has a picture drawn of you.
How that happened now was that I was involved there with Boer taking heifers out to Africa. And the first time I went out with the heifer, we had the heifer back in the yard, and I got a horse box from Brendan Fitz. They had the heifer up to Limerick, and Mickey drew the. We had a photo of that, and Mickey drew the painting then from that. I have that at home, it's a lovely painting. But one of the things that was important to me about that now was that while I was out in Africa, that time, then my shed got blown away, and that shed is in the photo now perfectly, but that photo could never again be got. Mm-hmm. It's a different type of a shed that's there now. Mm-hmm. So
it was
like,
in the moment.
Yeah, it was. But anyway, like, sure, today, to come over here today and to see all the different people who are giving different, you know, paintings that Mickey had done. It's very hard to believe that he had done so much, because he was always working, you know, and very hard physical work. But you could never know how he got all the time to do that. But mm-hmm. one of the things I remember was we were back in the field when we were calling bees, and Mickey pulled out a matchbox out of his pocket, and he said to me, them two fellas were in flatters last night. He said, we don't know. He had two fellas in flatters that he couldn't know, and he drew them out perfectly.
Wow. So you need a no camera if you're around him.
Yes. But he was a lovely man to be with. Like, he was a man, I would say, that never complained about anything, whether there was a big family or a small family, or a man with a big job or a small job. Mickey took everyone like at face value, you know.
A big thank you to Lily O'Sullivan for inviting me out to the Mickey J. Cavan expedition, and to Phil Healy as well for speaking with me. And if you have any memories of Mickey, do let us know. You can do so by emailing me kflynn@radiokerry.ie, or you can do so by texting again 083 300 3300. It's lovely the way it brought a community together, and it was such a crowd as well. It was roasting on the day, but going around and seeing his artwork, and it's just the craft and the whole idea of just how unique it was, and it was just one of a kind, and how everyone had their own special memories of him as well. It was absolutely beautiful. But do make sure you can get in touch with your memories there. Now we must go for a quick break. We'll be back with the archive of Sean Hurley after the
Travels Through a Kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
And you're very welcome back to the final part of Travels Through a Kingdom. Now it's time to go back in time to the archive of Sean Hurley's Kerrywhite. And this week's piece comes from when Sean spoke to Anita Fennelly when she moved to the Basket Islands.
Our next guest on Kerrywhite this evening is a lady I interviewed back in mid-2000. She's a teacher in County Wexford and an author as well. But back in 2000, her world was a combination of stress and burnout. And also, she was in the middle of a grieving process at the same time due to a bereavement. So one day, she got into her car and drove to Kerry. She took the road to Dingle and down to Dunquin, where she asked a local boatman there to take her to the Blasket Islands. Her intention was for a short stay there only. But it turned out more than that. Her name is Anita Fennelly, and I spoke with Anita on the phone line. And I will now let her tell her own story to us. As it turned out, it was a most interesting one.
Hi, Sean. Funny, listening to your description there, it sounds like a different person now at this stage, but it wasn't a conscious decision. I just made it to the end of term. I'd had a really difficult time. A friend said to me, why don't you go and stay in her place in England for a few weeks? Couldn't even face the airport now in crowds. So I thought I'd get a B&B, spend a few days in the West, until I ended up at Slayhead. I had been out to the Blaskets when I was at school and just loved the place. I don't know, I had some draw to the place. So I ended up going out for what I thought was a day, and sure, I came back 3 months later.
Now, this was the year 2000, you tell me?
Yes.
And where are you from originally?
I'm from Kilkenny, and that's where I'm living now, in South Kilkenny.
Are you teaching in Wexford, somebody told me?
I am, yes, in Uros in County Wexford. It's very close here, I'm right on Diddley.
And that was the archive of Sean Hurley. And that is it for this evening's programme. I want to say a big thank you to Dahi O'Shea, to Helen in the Kerry County Museum, to Tommy and Aoife in Kerry County Library, and to Lily O'Sullivan and Phil Healy from the Airfort Historical Society as well for coming on tonight's Travels Through a Kingdom. Remember, you can watch the interviews with Dahi, Helen, Tommy and Aoife on our Facebook page and YouTube pages as well. And do make sure you call down to see them as well. They're one of a kind and they're only on display for so long as well. So before the kids go back to school and whatnot, it'd be a lovely thing to go and see. Stay tuned here on Radio Kerry, because after news at 7 we have Elaine with 7 Days, and then the wonderful Sean Riley is on from 8 with Irish Favourites. So until next week, I'll catch you at the same time. Do take care.
You're listening to Travels Through a Kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.